This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscowain. Marga Gomez was born into a showbiz family. Her father was a Cuban-born comedian. Her mother was a Puerto Rican exotic dancer. The three of them used to perform together on the stages of New York City's now famous Latino theaters. Her parents never made it big time, but they turned their daughter into a performer. Marga Gomez first established her own reputation as an actress and comedienne in San Francisco in the early 80s. Her blend of social commentary, storytelling, and sexual politics made her a favorite in many of the local clubs and cabarets. Her one-woman show, Memory Tricks, opened this week at the Joseph Papp Public Theater in New York. She began to write the piece when her mother was first diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. It's both a funny and tragic story of Gomez's stormy relationship with her mother from childhood to the present. Memory Tricks begins with Marga Gomez recounting an incident in her early life.
One day, after school, I heard my parents talking in the dining room, and since it didn't sound like they were having a fight, I figured it was safe to go downstairs. It turned out that they were having a debate over who was my favorite parent. My father was a comedian. His stage name was Willie Huesito de Nylon Chevalier. Maybe you heard of him. And my mother was a dancer, and her stage name was Margot the Exotic. And I was the only child that they would ever have together. My father doted on me. He had all these nicknames for me. He used to call me Ms. Gomez, Lieutenant, my little girl. Would you kindly come and sit for a momentito? Siéntate, my darling. I'm going to ask you a little question. I want you to thin it over. Okie dokie. Who do you love more? Me? Your daddy? Your captain? Your fiancé, or your mother? What you think, Mimi? What you say, Champy? Come, 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 my dear child. Who's number one?
Gee, Daddy, I love you both. I love you both the same.
Margita, you can only pick one. Now, tell the truth. Tell your father who you love the most. Are you going to pick a man who couldn't get out of bed for your first communion because he was out all night with his garbage friends? Cállate, Cheva. I am talking now. Are you going to pick him, or are you going to pick your mother, who takes care of you, who takes you to the doctor when you're sick, who takes you everywhere, everywhere that you need to go, who buys your clothes and pays for them with her own money? Tell me right now, Marga Gomez. Because if you want your father so much, then I can have another child.
Well, it's real close. If I had to say, I guess that I do. Then I guess that I would pick you, Mom. Did you hear that, Cheva? A daughter wants to be with her mother. La madre is number one, and that will never change. Nunca. Nunca.
How much did your parents fight over your affections?
Well, you know, my parents fought over everything, and my affections were just one of the trophies. They were very competitive. They were in a competitive business. They were up from poverty and immigrants, so they were just, they seemed to turn all the pain that they were experiencing in their lives against themselves and against each other. I was just sort of this amusing little prize that went back and forth. And I think that when they were together, that was just kind of, I mean, it was almost like a play fighting thing too, you know. It's kind of one of the, just the ways they related to each other. I mean, they had separate rooms from, like, as long as I can remember. My dad had a room, she had a room, I had a room, the Chihuahua had a room. We were very close-knit family. I had a very skewed view on family life growing up.
Let me ask you, as an only child, as you said, the only child your parents ever had together, did that make you really an expert on your parents? You had the ability to watch them without being distracted by brothers and sisters.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was an intimate with them, a colleague, and I was also around all their very showy, unusual, flamboyant friends, like Daisy, the crazy dancer. You know, they one time, they threw a birthday party for me, and they... They threw it at 10 o'clock, you know, after shows on a school night, so none of my childhood friends could come, but all their friends came.
Did you have childhood friends? I mean, kids, friends that were your own age?
I had, I had a little friend around the corner. She was an Italian, of Italian descent, and, she was always telling me what her parents said about the Puerto Ricans and stuff, which never, really clicked with me because I didn't realize, I was Puerto Rican, which I am, Puerto Rican and Cuban. But I was a Catholic school kid. I went to Catholic school for a few years, just enough to destroy my self-esteem. And we were little, little frightening Tasmanian Catholic school kids, really bratty, super bratty. I mean, I used to do all these pranks. I could only really produce with intense supervision. I need a very tough director because I'm used to nuns. And so once we got out of school, we'd do terrible things to the New Yorkers. We'd go and throw boxes down on the subway during rush hour. And we never hurt anybody, but just annoyed people really a lot.
Now, did kids in the neighborhood envy you because your parents were actors and in the theater? Was there something exotic about your life?
Yes and no. A lot of people in the neighborhood were afraid of my parents because, there was a lot of old world superstition, and my parents were only seen leaving the house at night with dark glasses on, so they thought they were vampires.
That's in your piece, but that's really how people felt about your parents, that they truly were vampires.
Well, my parents were weird, yeah. I mean, they didn't really relate to anybody in the neighborhood, and my parents definitely tried to pretend that they were in Hollywood, and it's just this house happened to be on 169th Street in Manhattan, but they were actually in Hollywood, living out, a Hollywood dream.
So they had powerful imaginations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, they were deluded, I guess, and so was I. I was taught to be deluded as a child.
Now, you did perform with your parents at times.
Oh, yeah. When I was a kid, they would... my parents met... In the shows in Latino theaters, in the 60s or 50s. And so they would do this. My father would write these sketches. He put these shows together, and he would have a sketch, sort of towards the end called La Familia Cómica, The Funny Family. And he had about, 20, 30 sketches, and he would just do them to death. And occasionally in the sketch, there would be, you'd need a child, and so they would use me because they wouldn't have to pay me. And same thing with a chihuahua. They'd use a dog. Our dog wouldn't have to pay the dog either.
Now, did you like being on stage with your parents?
Of course. I mean, I wanted to actually take over there. I definitely had a large ego as a small child. And I was comfortable. I mean, I was always comfortable on stage or backstage or anything to do with live performance. It's a lot easier to figure out than making movies.
Now, your mother was known as Margot the Exotic. Just how exotic a dancer was she?
Well, when she first started dancing, she was an Afro-Cuban dancer, and she became a dancer so she could make money to take acting lessons, because that's really what she wanted to do, was be a movie star. And, for reasons of, racial bias, she never got to get very far in that department. She was just an extra. So she was an Afro-Cuban dancer, and then she learned belly dancing. And she started dancing in clubs she danced at the Waldorf Astoria, and then she would do a lot of Anglo nightclubs with, comics, Alan King and... Tootie, from Car 54. Remember
sure.
that?
Sure. Oh, sure.
Yeah, because I was so excited one time. She called me from the club because I was a big Tootie fan. And Tootie got on the phone and went, ooh, ooh. And that was, of course, now a few people are remembering Tootie. She was, she was a really wonderful dancer. I mean, she could dance even, now she can't dance too much. But, she was like, she could always get all the latest steps, rock and, the Frug, the Monkey, Watusi, all that.
What did she wear as a dancer?
Oh, I see what you're trying to get at. Not much, but the essential parts, she could get on, I think she could get on hard copy. You know, she had enough to get on hard copy, but very little. I mean, very little. I think technically it was, you know, she was dressed, but it was just, she was pushing the envelope. In fact, I think she was wearing an envelope. I think that's what it was.
Well, what I want to really get at is I think for many children, they try not to think of their mothers as sexual
naked.
People,
yeah.
as naked people.
Yeah.
And mothers usually go along with them and pretend that they don't have a sexual life.
Oh.
But could you have that illusion with your own mother?
No. In fact, I mean, when I was a kid, of course, you're not uptight about the body. So everything seemed normal that my mother was, you know, out there in very skimpy little, you know, G-string, not quite pasties, a little bit more than pasties. I don't know exactly what the terminology is in belly dance wear. But I know that my mother was very proud of her cleavage and really tried to expose it, you know, even in the coldest weather and at any, you know, early hour of the day. And when my parents split up and she remarried, I went to a new school, and then I started learning the ways of the world. And she was a housewife then. Her husband made her stop dancing and be a housewife. And she came to my parent, like open school day, and
yeah.
the parents came.
Yeah.
But she was like the only parent, you know, the only mother there in a low-cut dress. And the boys, you know, these were like, you know, 13-year-old boys. Oh, the hormones were popping. I mean...
And what about you?
I was starting to realize that my mother was different than other mothers about that time, you know, in her dress and like, you know, beehive thing and, you know, lots, you know, Coty pink lipstick. I realized that she was definitely very beautiful and special, and she was really making me embarrassed sometimes, yeah.
Well, you had a kind of a mantra, which was, I'll never be like my mother.
And it didn't work. I mean, I am becoming more like my mother. I sing like my mother. She would sing around the house. You know, whenever she got dressed, she would always sing. And it was always in her own special style. What a difference. La, 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 la. She knew so many songs and none of the words. And neither do I.
She had certain beauty tips and beauty ideas and theories that she imparted to you. What were some of that wisdom that she was trying to impart to you about being a woman or being female?
Well, there were none of them sunk in really, but for instance, she would tell me Marilyn Monroe is so beautiful because every night she sleeps in her brassiere, and I believed it. And when Marilyn died, and they said it was barbiturates, I suspected that it was actually a maiden form overdose. and then she saved articles from the National Enquirer on how to stay young. Very scientific research she did on beauty, and she read in Photoplay that Elke Sommer, the great Swedish blonde movie actress and role model to many Latinas, Elke did a weekly purifying mask. So my mother rushed out and got a big jar of this Queen Helene Green Beauty Cream, and she would have this Godzilla head, you know, this mask, and not be able to really move a muscle on her. You know, she just couldn't move. This was always a good time to give her a report card to sign if you got a bad grade, you know, because she couldn't really get on my case too much, very loud or expressive.
So she was interested in the blonde movie stars.
Well,
her role models.
She was, she had that white Kim Novak, you know, shade hair, white Marilyn. Yeah, it was white. I mean, I don't even know if that's called blonde. I thought blonde has a little yellow, but I guess it's blonde. It's white blonde.
So she obviously bleached her hair.
Yes. In fact, I would have to help her bleach, you know, her hair sometimes, and I'd miss big spots, and oh, I'd be in so much trouble. You know, because you'd have to go to the nightclub, you know, with mostly all white hair and then this big little, you know, dark blotch in the back.
Do you look in any way like your mother?
Well, I think I'm actually, as far as my face, I think it's a blend of two of them. But I feel like I have her body. Mine can't dance. But, you know, I could put on that little outfit if I wanted to, and I think I'd look okay. It's a generous, full course meal body. And the thing that really freaks me out is just when it's, you know, it's all the stuff inside. I mean, when I hear it in my voice, you know, when I'm saying something kind of feminine, like, can you help me? I can't do it. Now, did you hear my mother there, Margaret?
Yeah,
that's not me. Ooh. And, you know, I yawn, start to yawn like her.
Well, she's a very distinctive yawn.
She had a five-part yawn.
Was it?
And always, you know. So now I'm like
you do that
four.
Now?
I do four, but if I... Please shoot me, because that would just be the worst. I mean, that just drove me nuts as a teenager. That's when she started yawning because she had to be a housewife, so she was a little bored. Yeah, so it's a lot of the sound of her, and sometimes, you know, just I'm moving like her, and I am getting, you know, more femmy as I get older, yeah.
Well, I want to talk some more, but first we just have to take a very short break, and I'm speaking today on Fresh Air with performer Marga Gomez, and her one-woman show, Memory Tricks, opened this week at the Joseph Papp Theater in New York, and Memory Tricks is about her stormy and complex relationship with her mother, who was an exotic dancer and now has Alzheimer's disease. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. I'm speaking with performer Marga Gomez, and her one-woman show, Memory Tricks, opened this week in New York. Now, the other part of your piece, Memory Tricks, really is your relationship with your mother since she got diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. When did she get that diagnosis?
She got that, I guess it's almost about 5 years ago now, in 88, that she got the diagnosis. And it was very hard for me because the first part of Memory Tricks is the account of my trying to get her attention and her focus and not getting it. And then there was a really major distancing. I mean, I moved to San Francisco and hardly talked at all. And she wasn't really reaching out herself, but I let it go. And of course, when I found out she had Alzheimer's, I started to blame myself and just was so guilty that I hadn't tried a little harder to connect or get over my anger or disappointment with her over the years. It was 5 years ago.
Were there some early signs? Some kind of tip-off signs?
My mom was always very spacey, ditzy, you know, you could say. And in fact, I was doing stand-up comedy. I mean, I still do. And sometimes I would use her in my act as, oh, you know, my mom's such a ditz, what, you know, blah, 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 like many comics do anyways. Then the joke was on me after a few years. So it was really hard to tell because, I mean, you know, when she was, you know, 28, she was not able to find car keys, you know, and then she really couldn't find car keys and her glasses. And, she drove through the garage. I mean, she just drove through the garage door. You know, that is a tip off right there. And then, of course, the thing that it will always be a mystery to me and my sister is when she took off, she had other kids when she remarried. She took off to Paris in 83. The man that she married, she had problems with, and I guess she got really mad at him. And plus, she always wanted to be French. She just disappeared, mm-hmm. took off to Paris. And
went there to look for her.
Yeah, my stepfather, he did buy me a plane ticket. I went thinking that I would find her. I'd put myself in her heels, her high heels, and go where she would go. Or, you know, she'd find me. You know, I would just do something wrong and she'd find me. I'd, you know, go to the Eiffel Tower, light up a joint, something like that. She'd find me. I never found her. And she came back about a year later. And he filed for divorce and then sort of did like a psychological warfare on her, I believe. I'm not saying that's why she got Alzheimer's, but she just seemed to be cracking up after that.
Well, one of the things that you seem to notice, and perhaps this is more of a giveaway even than her forgetfulness, was that you noticed her hair was dirty.
Well, I think that's really when she was hitting bottom, and I'm sure that that's when it was really coming up for her. And so that was, 6 or 7 years ago. I went to visit her. Yeah, I went to visit her, and it had been maybe a year or 6 months, and I was, you know, she always kept herself looking good, and her roots were, out. Her roots were, and they were gray. You know, they were all gray. And I don't even think I knew what her real hair color was, ever. I don't think I ever saw it. You know, I saw darkness, but I could never really tell what it was all like altogether. And now it was gray, and she was sleeping in the guest room because she didn't want to sleep with my stepfather, and that room was all trashed, and her bed was broken. And, you know, I thought it was the marriage.
What's your mother like now?
Well, now she's very different in a much later stage than where Memory Tricks is frozen in time in 1990. And since that time, she's deteriorated a lot, and she's in a very late stage. So I believe that she knows when I'm there. And that I can, you know, I mean, I talk to her. I do the lines from the show, which I hope, you know, she likes. I feel that she's there on a level. I feel it's like being buried alive.
Mm.
But people will go, you know, and when I go, she's in a hospital now. People will go, does she know you? I hate that question. Yes, she knows me. You know, what am I supposed to say? No, she doesn't know me. I'm just here because I'm an idiot. Yes, she knows me. But now she can't move much, and she doesn't make even a sound, and it's hard to get her to eat.
Can she look at you?
She can. She looks at me, and her eyes don't quite focus in. So it's really a late stage.
Now, when you wrote Memory Tricks, this was a couple of years ago, and your mother's condition was not quite as severe as it is today. Did she know that you were doing this piece about her and you together?
No, I mean, unless she knows it now, because I tell her, and I don't know how she'd feel about it. You know, I think if there's an afterlife and I would run into her, I'd have to deal with it then. She'd probably slap me around heaven or something. You know?
Why?
Well, because maybe she's, you know, she'd be mad. She was pretty strict and private and all that, but. I was grieving, and the work I do is I talk about what's happening in my life, and I could not skip over it. And I also feel like I wanted to make her famous. I wanted to give her a tribute. I wanted to do that with both my parents. You know, that's what they wanted their whole lives. And I think when people see Memory Tricks, the feedback I've gotten is that they love my mother. Or, you know, my mother's like your mother. And so she's living on. And in a way, I think she got what she wanted.
Margo Gomez, thank you so much for joining us on Fresh Air today.
Thank you, Marty. It was my pleasure.
Margo Gomez's one-woman show, Memory Tricks, is at the Joseph Papp Public Theater in New York to the beginning of May. I'm Marty Moskowain, and this is Fresh Air.